This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Here we be on a rain-soaked Friday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as it is pouring, raining cats and dogs here on a Friday in Western New York. Practice inside today. We'll get to the practice updates in just a second. Before we do that, I want to say happy Veterans Day to all of our veterans out there for your service to our country, including my dad, my uncle, my great uncle, my father-in-law, my wife's uncle. It's just, we got a long list of military service in our family, so just want to recognize them, along with all the other veterans, for their service and for the sacrifice of the families. The family, I think what gets lost sometimes, and this is Salute to Service Month, obviously, in the NFL as well, and that's what me and Steve are wearing here today. That was Steve's idea, so kudos to you, Steve. I think what gets lost sometimes is everybody respects the service of the veterans for obvious reasons, but the sacrifices that the families make, too. You know, you got family members that are running a household on their own, raising kids on their own for much of the years that their spouses are serving our country. So salute to the families that make the sacrifices as well.
My father, my dad was an Army member. My father-in-law was a Navy fighter pilot. My brother-in-law was an F-16 pilot. And my oldest brother was 18 months old before he ever laid eyes on his father.
Wow.
Because they'd gotten married and then you know, off to training camp and all that stuff, boot camp, and then he was gone. And he was 18 months old before he ever, or something, somewhere around in there, before he ever saw his own dad. So, it's a sacrifice for everybody. And today, our military is totally voluntary. So it's kudos to all those guys.
Yeah.
We appreciate and thank you for your service.
I think I told you that. So my dad got drafted.
Guys and girls.
My dad got drafted for Vietnam. And at that point in time, there were four places you could get stationed. Vietnam, Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, the Panama Canal, or Alaska, because they're all worried about the Russian threat. Russians are coming over any moment now while we're all focused on Vietnam.
Right.
That's what they were, you know, back then, Cold War and all that stuff. My dad got stationed in Alaska. He was very thankful they didn't have to go to jungle warfare in Vietnam. So he's up there running maneuvers in Fairbanks and God knows where else. You want to talk getting he had Arctic gear.
Oh, yeah.
He said it was so weird because for 4 months he's doing jungle warfare training in South Carolina, you know, going through swamps down there to get ready for Vietnam, and then all of a sudden he's in the snow and he's wearing Arctic gear.
Right.
Doing overnight maneuvers. But he was in Anchorage, just like your daughter is now.
Yeah, it is a military city. And, kudos to everybody. Thank you so much for your service. It feels good to have them guarding us.
Oh, yeah, unquestionably. So happy Veterans Day to all the veterans. And, again, thank you for your service. Want to get you some practice updates. We know Josh Allen is the major point of concern here. And during the media viewing portion of practice, Josh Allen was not seen out there. Head coach Sean McDermott met with the media this morning prior to practice and said Josh remains day-to-day. He was not yet ruled out for the game on Sunday this morning and said they're literally taking it hour by hour as to his availability for Sunday. So we'll wait. We're reduced to waiting now for what the Friday injury report says. Does it declare him out? Does it declare him questionable, doubtful? Or is he,
Is he
good to go?
Is he still, is he a spectator? Well, did he do anything? Nobody knows, so we'll see. What are they thinking? And the closer it gets, you got to make a call. Because if he's, you got to bring Matt Barkley up, right?
He would have to be a practice squad elevation
for
Sunday.
So we'll watch for that, and I imagine that'll happen no matter what. Even if Josh plays, he'll probably be up, right? They'll take
that
roster
spot. Well, just for safety,
right? Exactly.
We'll have to wait and see what the Friday injury report tells us and take it from there. And other updates with respect to practice, there is good news. First of all, there was good news coming from the Thursday injury report, which came out after we went off the air. So let me bring you up to speed on that. The good news from the Thursday injury report was Spencer Brown went from a limited to a full participant on Thursday, so it looks like he's finally ready to return to the starting lineup at right tackle. That's good news off the ankle injury. He had been out of the lineup since week six when he suffered the injury against Kansas City. Tremaine Edmonds did not practice yesterday or Wednesday. The good news there is he was dressed for practice today, so we'll wait and see what the Friday injury report tells us about his level of participation, but he was participating in practice today, had pads on the whole thing, so that's good news. Kyer Elam was limited in practice on Wednesday, then did not practice at all on Friday. And so Thursday, and was not dressed for practice today. So Kyer Elam, unfortunately, going in the wrong direction. And now we're seeing reports on Twitter that the media was just allowed in after practice ended in the field house today. They were practicing indoors because of the rain. And they said that there are reports that Josh Allen was seen running off the field in his practice jersey. And Wednesday and Thursday, while he was out watching practice, he didn't have his practice jersey on. We'll see if that means anything when the injury report comes out. Anyway, getting back to it, Kyer Elam didn't look like he was going to be practicing today, so his availability certainly seems to be up in the air. Tre'Davious White was out there and seemingly dressed for practice. Whether he's ready to come back or not, we do not know. He is not on the injury report because he was activated to the 53-man roster off of reserve PUP. He technically does not have an injury designation, so he's not on the injury report. Hasn't been since he's been activated. It's just a matter of whether they feel he is ready to return from his ACL injury suffered last season. And then here are the other good reports from Thursday. Mitch Morse went from a limited to a full participant on Thursday. So too did David Quessenberry, who was dealing with a groin injury. Also, Dane Jackson and Matt Milano went from limited to full participants Thursday. So Dane Jackson, Matt Milano, Spencer Brown, Mitch Morse, all trending in the right direction. Starters for the Bills, trending in the right direction, seemingly will be available for the game on Sunday, barring any kind of setback in today's practice, Steve.
Yeah, they're going to be healthier this week, it looks like. But, man, oh, man, one of the things they have not had to deal with in the past two or three years is injuries, and now it's been a constant ongoing battle this year. Not just with guys. This is like with contributors, starters. They got some problems with injuries this year, and it's hamstrung their abilities.
Right, and we neglected to mention the two players that Coach McDermott declared out for Sunday's game, Jordan Poyer and Greg Rousseau. Both of them declared out for Sunday's game, so they will not be available. And once again, for the fourth time this season, the Bills defense will not have Micah Hyde or Jordan Poyer at the safety positions. And I think it's safe to say, Steve, that the defense has looked different without those two guys in there.
Yeah.
Got young guys busting their tail to fill the void there, but I don't think we're knocking anybody else saying it doesn't look like it does when Poyer and I are out there.
No.
Those are two pretty special players.
They are, but they are still tough to score on. I think you're lacking some splash plays, which is one of the things it looked like early in the season. The Bills were going to be back in the saddle getting those. They're still getting some turnovers, but you know you need those from a defense. You need sacks and you need turnovers is what you need. And without Poyer and Hyde, I think there's that sense that they're just out there trying to, you know, do their job instead of getting out ahead of it mentally and saying we're going to make them pay for their mistakes. It's I think the injuries have really played a huge role in the Bills and the way they've played football. You know, they're still getting wins, but yeah, the Miami loss in no doubt was because of the injuries and the conditions of the day. You got to feel like when the Bills are healthy, which they're not going to be 100% healthy this week, but you feel like when they're healthy, they're too tough for these teams to beat. But they're having a hard time getting there.
Bills practice updates are presented by LECOM, Lake Erie College of Osteopathic Medicine. And I got to tell you, with Kyer Elam looking very iffy for Sunday, be a nice week to get Tre'Davious back, even if it's only on a part-time basis. Because if you're down Kyrie, you're down to Dane Jackson, Christian Benford, and then you're, after that, you know, you're looking at Tre'Davious, Saran Neal. I mean, it's, you know, is Tre'Davious available first and foremost? And if he's not, you're getting a little thin back there. You just flat out are. So, I mean, you got Cam Lewis, who's been a corner, but he's been working more at safety through training camp this year, and it seems like they want to make that a focus for him going forward. But, yeah, you don't have Tre'Davious or
Kyrie.
You're basically down to
Saran Neal, Christian Benford, Dane Jackson.
Dane Jackson and Taron Johnson.
And then
Cam Lewis, I guess, is kind of a swing guy between safety and corner.
Right. He could go both ways. You're light there.
So hopefully Tre'Davious can be up in some capacity at the cornerback position for the Bills this week. He has been off reserve PUP going on 3 weeks now.
It'll be interesting, too, to see if, and I go back and look at it, they've got Jamarcus Ingram, a cornerback on the practice squad, and they've got Xavier Rhodes, who's around. Xavier Rhodes got a lot of experience. He's big, long.
He's 6'1", a former Viking, too.
Right, 6'1", 210. He's got 10 years in the league, so he's not young and spry, but he's got a wealth of experience. So they've got some guys on the practice squad, and it's going to be really interesting this week to watch as they get to the deadline for the practice squad call-ups because – you know, if Matt Barkley does not get called up, that's huge news.
Yeah.
Because I think we both anticipate he will because of the Josh Allen uncertainty. And then if a corner gets called up,
that means Tre'Davious probably isn't up.
That's right.
Knowing Kyrie, in all likelihood, is down.
Yeah.
So you need an extra corner
there. Yeah, if Kyrie's not practicing or whatever, so that's going to be really interesting because you can anticipate the Bills are going to have to make some moves like that with the Vikings coming to town, and then the injury list is what it is.
Right. This week's game sponsor, incidentally, is St. Bonaventure University. St. Bonaventure is an official education partner of the Buffalo Bills. Around the NFL, we go here quickly, which is presented by Kalida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And Deonta Foreman leads the Panthers past the division rival Atlanta Falcons, 25-15 with a 130-yard rushing day that included a touchdown. Carolina was committed to running it on the ground and grinding out a victory, and they did.
They got some really good running from all their guys.
Including a former Bills player.
Yeah, Raheem Blackshear was released from the Bills. Had a nice little preseason for the Bills. Ended up in Carolina. And
yeah, they picked him up.
He made a couple of nice runs last night, no question about it. And so did the rest of those guys. They've got some guys in the backfield for Carolina, and it's no wonder.
They have a pretty good offensive line, too.
And for that reason, it kind of really makes a lot of sense, given now that they won this game last night, it's easy to say, but trading a $15 million a year running back or $10 million a year running back in Christian McCaffrey makes a lot of financial sense for them with the production they're getting from the guys they've got.
You know, in this offseason, they'll invest use the draft capital they got in the McCaffrey trade to try to rebuild the roster with a new head coach going forward. Steve Wilks is the interim head coach right now, and we'll see if he gets the opportunity to keep that job or whether they'll seek a new hire on a permanent basis.
Right.
But nice win for the Panthers last night over their division rival Falcons. So that is that. The Raiders' injury list continues to get longer. Steve mentioned on yesterday's show how Darren Waller, the tight end, was put on injured reserve. So too was their slot receiver, Hunter Renfro. I mean, that team is folding like a house of cards right now.
Yep.
Having a monumental problem, not to mention the fact that Blake Martinez retired, just up and retired in the middle of the season. I'm not hanging around for this mess.
You want to talk about bursting into flames and starting to nosedive. That's what they're doing. I mean, they had some high hopes in Vegas for the way their season might go. And of course, they had a new head coach in Josh McDaniels. You'd like to think maybe it was going to go differently for him than it did in Denver. Apparently not. You've got a guy like Derek Carr, who is sitting there, and you know, it was today. I mean, you're looking at if they release him by June 1, they save $30 million on their cap next year. And if they're going to start rebuilding, you know,
you think they blow it up and draft a quarterback? You want to just release Derek Carr and get nothing?
He's had 6 different head coaches in 9 years.
I know. He's a talented player. I don't think there's any debate about that. He just hasn't been in a stable situation for his entire career.
It's a mess. It's a mess. And you're gonna let Josh McDaniel continue?
Yeah, but if you're – well, I'm not saying that. Josh McDaniels, you know, whatever. Do whatever you want with him. My point is, if you're going to totally blow the thing up and rebuild, I don't think you just release Derek Carr. Don't you trade him somewhere? I know you're on the hook for big money, but – The Eagles did it with Carson Wentz, took on a huge cap hit, and look what they did. There ain't no. They got a quarterback.
Here's the difference. If they release him, they save $30 million.
Yeah.
If they can trade him, it's the same thing.
Well, I think you would take – is it in the last year of his contract?
I don't know. But
either way, my point is, if I have the ability to get a first-round pick for Derek Carr, and I'm not sure you could – but if you can, even if you can get a second-round draft choice, if you're blowing this thing up and rebuilding, you got to get as much draft capital as you can find.
Sure.
Not only for cheap labor, but for quality talent in the first 3 rounds of the draft.
Yeah, and you think about it, would you rather you could
let
make
him
it
go.
Happen? You could let him go, or if you could find a trade partner, obviously you do that.
I mean, he's 32.
But if you're going to trade him and you're going to get a $30 million cap relief by cutting him before June 1, I mean, wouldn't you, like, dangle him in front of a team like Carolina?
Yeah, I think you would.
Right?
There's a host of other teams.
There's going to be a new head coach out there. There's going to be people around. I mean, that's
yeah, he'll be 32 next season, and he's got 3 years left on his contract. Now, they have the out this year, and it would be like a – 5.6 in dead cap.
That's it.
To get out of the contract.
That's nothing.
I would try to trade him. I really would. Now, and then tell the people that are interested in acquiring him, hey, renegotiate the contract with Derek. Derek, you want to come play for us? Sure. Okay, let's redo your deal and spread it out.
Spread it out, but guarantee a ton of cash.
Because his cap hit next year is $34 million. That's not terrible.
Oh, not in this day and
age.
It's
not terrible.
No, if
for a 32-year-old quarterback who can still play? Maybe stomach the contract this year and spread him out over the, you know, spread that money out in the last 2 years where it gets a little silly, $43 million the last 2 years. Spread that out. But some team might, with a lot of cap space, might be like, bring it on.
Yeah.
You might be able to find a couple of suitors for that kind of money. That's not ridiculous quarterback money. And if you don't have one right now, you're probably willing to pay it.
Yeah. A team like Carolina, a team like Indianapolis, a team like Tampa Bay, if Tom Brady goes away, a team like New Orleans. I mean, there's a ton of them. It's Tennessee, for goodness sake.
Yep. Tennessee would take him, I think, in a second.
Yeah, don't you think?
Now, their money gets a little tricky, although they can rid themselves of the Tannehill contract after this year with minimal cap hit, as I understand it. You're still paying Henry a boatload
of
money.
What about the New York football Jets?
Depends on how they feel about Zach Wilson at the end of the year. But, yeah, that's a possibility. Can't rule it out. There's a lot of teams.
Yes, there's a lot of teams.
They'll find somebody. I think they could trade him. I really do. And it would behoove them to do that. If they are truly blowing it up and rebuilding from the ground up.
What about the Rams? They got the money.
Could do it with the Rams, too. Yeah. There's going to be a multitude of options for the Raiders to move him. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, joining us for his regular Friday segment is Bills safety Micah Hyde. He joins us next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Football Friday. And we'll get to the OBL Fan Friday mailbag with some of your questions a little bit later on in the show. But right now, back for another installment here on Friday is one Micah Hyde joining us on the show. And we are happy to introduce a new weekly segment with this guy. And, you know, I don't want to take credit or anything, but I thought this was kind of a catchy title. So,
so you came up with it.
Yeah.
I needed you to sign off on it.
Yeah, it was his idea.
It was his idea.
And, and so we're here we're here to press it into action. It's called Nothing to Hide with Micah Hyde. How about that?
Mm.
We like that?
Catchy.
It's pretty good.
Look at the graphics, man. Yeah.
Look at that. We got neon lighting up.
We got some production value going on.
Oh, yeah. What are your seeds? Are you just regular or are you a ranch guy?
I do them all.
You do barbecue too?
Barbecue, ranch, dill pickle.
Dill's pretty good. Dill pickle?
Sweet and salty. Sweet and salty is the best kind.
Yeah.
Sweet and salty.
Dill's nice.
Yeah.
But sweet and salty is.
I got to admit, I don't have the teeth. Tongue dexterity to put like a whole bunch in my mouth. Like,
well, you gotta do it.
I can do two max because I get.
You a baseball player? No.
Soccer guy. Soccer guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a baseball player. It just comes natural.
Yeah, you're just sitting in the dugout. Doing I get it. All right, so nothing to hide here. And what we're gonna do is basically Micah is gonna answer questions from you, the fans, just about anything under the sun, football related. Family related, you want to know if his kid's already like throwing a football or making interceptions or something.
Breaking stuff.
You can ask that or breaking stuff, right? You got the house proofed, right? Like,
yes, we do.
As best you can.
If MJ will find a way, he will find a way to break
but
something.
They all do.
Yeah,
they all do. So, all right, we'll kick it off here, Micah. First of all, on the Nothing to Hide tweet sheet here for Friday, this first one comes from Cole, and he says, can you ask Micah to rave about Matt Milano? I believe they got to Buffalo in 2017 together, and I feel like Matt doesn't get talked enough nationwide. I feel like he's a line behind some pretty big superstars on the team. So this guy just kind of wants some Matt Milano love here.
Yeah. I love it.
Why don't we do this? Because, I mean, you've talked about Matt before. Uh-huh. You respect him as a teammate. It baffles me that he's never been to a Pro Bowl. What can you maybe tell us about Matt's game that maybe we don't normally see that you, with a trained eye for football and film study, see in his game that maybe the rest of us don't see?
Yeah, well, I tell Lano all the time that I feel like he's the best backer in the league, and he's up there with the best. I don't see how he's not getting the recognition he deserves. And you know, speaking to him, you know, he can literally do it all. He can blitz. He can cover. He can tackle. He can catch. He can do it all. So to see Lano go out there and be successful, especially this season and in years past, it's a wonderful thing. And you know, I see him as I don't think he's behind anybody on this defense. You know, the superstars that that Cole just asked about. He's one of the best players on this team and on this defense.
We always tend to give him this label of being a really instinctive player.
Yeah,
where you know he just sees it. Give us your insight. How would you define that just as a guy who kind of seems out ahead of everything mentally?
Well, I think that the biggest and most honorable thing someone can say about my game is I'm just a football player. I'm instinctive. I react. I just make plays. I'm smart. And that's Lano. Like that's him to a T in a linebacker's body. He's a former safety, but in a linebacker's body. He just is – He has a new coach in Bobby Babbage this year, and you know Bobby is very detailed. So I feel like Lano was getting those nuggets each and every day in the meeting room, and he's going out there and showing what he's able to do on Sundays.
So this is a nickname I had not heard before. Lano, is that what we're calling him?
Or tomorrow might be something different. I call him Lano. I call him Lonnie. I call him Maddie Boy. I call him anything. You know, it's just whatever I feel like calling him that day.
He's not though.
Oh,
he's not
because he strikes me as being a guy holler at.
No.
He's like the dog that comes to any name.
Lano is. other than Isaiah McKenzie, which we all know about, Lil Dirty, Lano might be the biggest junk talker within the team.
On the field or just in
practice? Within the locker room.
Okay. Seriously?
Oh, yeah. He always has something to say. And if something happens and, you know, say I make a wrong call or something and walk through or something, he'll study to let you know.
He starts chirping.
Yeah. I'm putting Matt Milano's business out there because he needs to hear this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He started being held accountable.
Yeah.
How much does it come up that because I'm curious about this, because you mentioned that he was, you know, a former safety at Boston College. How much does that come up? Like, hey, like, you know, like, for example, when you said, I didn't make the right call.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, I was a safety. I know what you're supposed to be doing back there. Does he throw that at you?
No, I don't think it's nothing like that. I just think that he understands, you know, if he has a one-on-one matchup with the tight end, like, he's a former safety. And when you're a safety and you're matchup with a tight end, doesn't matter who it is, you feel like you have the advantage, you know, one-on-one. And so I think that's how Milano thinks.
Nick has the second question.
All right, Nick.
What can we do when teams start using the jet strategy by trying to get the ball out of their quarterback's hands so quickly that our D-line doesn't have time to be effective?
That's a very good question. I would say, you know, obviously we feel like our front four is the best in the league. And, you know, we put a lot on them to get after the quarterback. But if the quarterback's getting the ball out quick, you know, obviously us in the back end have to put some pressure on the receivers or on the tight ends, whatever it may be, on the skill positions. And at the same time, defense line, get their hands up, tip balls. We got one against Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Jordan Phillips tipped it up. Tim Settle tipped it up
and Lionel caught it. Yeah.
And Lionel caught it. So, but I think that ultimately, like, you can nickel and dime us all the way down the field. But I think that the best part about our defense and what we've been doing since 2017 is you know, not giving up big plays, and whenever that offense makes a mistake, capitalize on it and take the ball away. And if you force field goals, especially with the offense that we have, we're going to win most ball games.
Yeah, one of the things about it is in the league today, it used to be way back in the even before my time, it's like you got to run it and you got to stop the run. Nowadays, it's like you got to get after the passer and you got to create turnovers.
100%.
You scheme that way, right? I mean, and it's a conversation that's ongoing. And
yeah.
Give us some insights to, you know, your. You know, how the guys in the back end of the defense say, listen, if this happens, we can get one right here kind of thing, that those conversations.
Yeah, so we talk all the time. You know, especially in this league, like what you said, like offenses are, we feel, you know, aren't necessarily patient enough to just go 5 yards all the way down the field.
Right.
You know, they're gonna play action. They're going to try to take a shot. And when they take a shot, that's what we're sitting on. That's when we say, okay, you know, you try to get a big play on us. You know, us in the back end, and you know, we're gonna you know, try to get a takeaway from it. So, you know, we just feel like within our defense, within our scheme, we just don't give up big plays. And when offenses try to do that against us, that's when we take the ball away.
So let me ask you this: you're doing film study all week, and you might feel like you've got a hunch about something. Like, man, I keep seeing that, and it seems like there are opportunities for defenders when the offense does this or there's this kind of a play call. Kirk Cousins has only 6 interceptions this season, but all 6 are on downfield throws. So I'm sure that's something that maybe pop out to, you know, guys like you when you're watching the film during the week. Do you go back to the numbers and check? It's almost like you use it as a cross-reference point. Do you guys use numbers like that? All 6 of his picks, downfield throws this year.
We talk about numbers. There's so many numbers that get bounced around every week in meetings.
Okay.
And, you know, that's obviously what the coaches do. The coaches break down a lot of the film, and they give us the probability and the percentages and all that type of stuff. And, you know, there's a lasting joke within our defensive room. Like, I'm the type of guy, if it ain't 100%, I don't want to hear it. Like, I need high-tendency stuff. I don't want to hear 60% stuff. I don't want to hear it.
What about that one? All 6 of his interceptions are on downfield throws.
I love it. But that just means when he's taking shots down the field, obviously he has good guys on the outside that go get the ball, but yeah, also have some opportunity to make some plays for us.
Because Cousins seems like a very by the book quarterback. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of improvisation to his game. This is the call. I'm running the call. 3 steps, bang, ball's coming out or whatever. But the one guy that he will put it up for is Jefferson.
Yep.
And I understand why.
Exactly.
Like, he's going to give him chances to make plays. There's more 50-50 balls to him than really anybody else on their team.
Yeah.
What does that do for you guys as a defense? Because you know he's going to be targeted heavily.
Yeah.
But if you can plaster, you're probably going to have a chance to make a play.
Yeah, well, I think it comes two things. We know that Kirk Cousins, when he's playing well, he's playing well. When he's not getting pressure on him, he's able to make some throws and dial up and be one of the very good quarterbacks in the league. But when there's pressure on him, he's forcing throws, you know, like we just mentioned to Jefferson. We know that as a defense, we always have to know where he's at any given time. It doesn't matter if he's lined up in the backfield, he goes out wide, he's a single receiver, he's to the three, you know, to the three side. It doesn't matter. You always have to know where he's at. And you know, hopefully there's rare occurrences where he's just one-on-one. Hopefully, you know, there's a safety over top, and so when Kirk Cousins makes those mistakes, you go get it.
Yeah, because that's how Washington got a pick in the end zone last
week.
He throws a jump ball to him on a corner route. Corner tips it and the other guy gets the pick.
So we're talking about Justin Jefferson, but this next question from Chris to you, Mike, is who's the most dangerous offensive player you've watched on film this season so far, and why?
The most dangerous.
I guess it could be Josh.
This week's pretty good.
Yeah. I would say Jefferson is definitely at the top. Just what he's able to do, he's can catch any ball. His catch radius is huge. Fast break tackles, all that type of stuff. I'm going with my. I mean, obviously, I'm not watching him every week on film, but Josh Allen is a different beast. Josh Allen is somebody that you cannot account for on every single play. Like he can. You know, if you try to sit back he can get out there and run the ball. He can throw the ball. He can do it all. So I would say Josh Allen being the best offensive player in the league. Yeah,
the thing is, and I've seen it happen. We saw it. It started happening a lot in 2020 when you guys, you know, all of a sudden you guys took a huge step forward, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. You'd see like Vic Fangio in Denver when he's a head coach and calling the defensive plays. You saw it with Robert Saleh when he was in San Francisco. You went out there. You'd see these defensive coordinators on the sidelines just – they'd call the perfect defense, mm-hmm, with a free rusher, the whole thing. They got it. They got him.
Yeah.
And it turns into a touchdown against him.
Yep.
They're like, how can you do it? Because Josh just kind of overcomes it. He's a big, huge mistake eraser,
right? Exactly.
That's a real problem for defensive coordinators because – he turns a catastrophe into a touchdown.
He does. And you know, I was in Green Bay for 4 years, so I feel like I saw Aaron Rodgers in his prime, and that's exactly what he did. Defenses would call the perfect play, and it was just, you know, he'd scramble around or he'd run for 20 yards to get a first down, and it was just always something he was doing to push the, you know, to run up the score or, you know, push the stick. So that's Josh Allen right now, man. I just loved. I'm thankful I'm on this team and I'm able to watch him. You know, I'm out for this season, but I'm on, you know, sideline and front row seat to watch him play.
Robert, with the next question for you, Micah, who was your favorite team or player growing up?
Favorite team or player growing up?
For those that don't know, Fastoria, Ohio.
Yes, Fastoria, Ohio.
Where Micah grew up, which is what is that? Middle Southern?
It's Northwest Ohio.
Northwest.
Okay. Actually, closest to Detroit.
Oh, it is. Is it closer to Detroit than Cleveland?
It's closer to Detroit than Cleveland.
Okay.
And Cincinnati. Cincinnati's about 3.5 or whatever from the house. So, you know, we were surrounded by Indianapolis, you know, 3 hours or whatever. So there was a few teams in our area. Where I grew up, 10 minutes away was Ben Roethlisberger, and 30 minutes away was Charles Woodson. So I was a big Charles Woodson fan.
Okay.
As far as team, mm-hmm, you know, the Browns weren't too good. Detroit wasn't too good. Cincinnati wasn't too good. So yeah, I kind of just rode with the players, and I'd say Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson for sure.
What about besides football? Was there a team like baseball, basketball, any kind of team you gravitated to?
Oh, the tribe. Indians.
Okay.
Oh, I guess.
Now the Guardians right. Now, okay.
Yeah, for sure.
They had some good squads when, you know, you were
Back in the day, the Jim Tomey.
Albert Bell,
the Kenny Lofton, the Roberto Alomar.
Yep.
and his brother, Sandy Alomar.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some good teams.
Yep. All right. That's cool.
There you go.
JT asks, who is the fastest player on offense and fastest player on defense? And then he wants to know the strongest player on the team, and then I'll get to some of his other questions because he's got like five here.
Wow. So
fastest player offense and defense, and then the strongest player on the team.
Fastest player on offense. I'm going off GPSs that we run in practice and in the games. I think Taiwan technically is up there. You know, he's a gunner. He's on kickoff. He's running down there. He's
man, even at 34, still
he gets a chance
killing
to,
it.
He gets a chance to open it up
he
a
gets
little
a
bit.
Chance to open it up.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, if, for example, if I'm – have the highest GPS on, that's not a good thing. You know, that means I'm chasing somebody. right. It's not a good thing. Defensively, same thing. Saran is always up there because special teams are running down as gunner and kickoff.
They get a chance to build up.
He has, you know, 40, 50 yards to get going. And then strongest person on the team. Whew. Man, there's a lot of guys on the team that can.
I mean, what do football players in the locker room use most as the benchmark for who's the strongest? Are we talking a squat guy or a bench guy?
Yeah,
like, what determines true strength in the locker room?
That's a hard question to answer. I really don't know. Like, I would say there's a bunch of offensive linemen, defensive linemen that can just throw weight around. So I'm not in there to know who's the strongest.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, you got guys like Ed, that is just, you know, he might not put up the most weight, but he's just explosive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, guys like that are fun to watch lift.
Yeah. And, I mean, last year, I remember when Deion came back from his second bout with COVID. He comes back out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
We had a clip on our show, and we were talking about Deion or something, and it was one of those field-level views,
uh-huh,
which I love, from the end zone.
Yeah.
and he's coming out on a kick out, and this linebacker's coming to, he's got a beeline on the running back, and Deion literally throws him out of the camera shot, and he's over on the sideline somewhere on his back.
Deion's a beast. Like, even when you, like, even when you give him a five or something, like, it just, it hurts your hand. His hand feels like it's like 50 pounds.
But he's got meat hooks.
Yeah, so. it's just thick, you know. And so, D-Doc is probably one of those guys too that just naturally can just.
And then Big Phil would seem like a naturally
another one.
Jordan Phillips, like just a naturally strong guy. Yeah. Like you picture him like throwing bales of hay up on top of a You know what I mean? Just like it's nothing.
I would have loved to use him back in the day when I was working on the farm. Yeah.
So who wins a chicken wing eating contest?
That was the other question.
I mean, same thing. Like, there's just
a ton of guys that are in it.
Yeah, there's a ton of guys that are in it, and a ton of guys. I would say the number, if I had to put a number on it, probably into the 50s, 60s.
50, 60 wings.
Yeah, 60 wings.
You know who I like in one of those? I like Spencer Brown in one of them.
Spence? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He looks like a guy that can put it away.
You give him some a few beers on the side and some wings. Yeah, he's gonna give Barbell a run for their money.
You're in there for the long haul. Yeah.
And then JT finally says, "Get healthy, stay healthy, go Bills."
Appreciate it, JT.
So that's cool. So those are just a few questions fired off for Micah. And you know, I look at this game and. You see a 7-1 football team in the Vikings, and you can't knock them for who's on their schedule. They got to play who they have to play.
Yeah.
One win, though, against a team with a winning record of their 7 victories. And again, can't knock them for who's on their schedule. They don't make their schedule. Does that – I know you guys in the locker room and the coach all week is like, you know what I mean? There's none of that complacency crap. But I got to believe there's a little bit of human nature there, like, we could take these guys. Come on, like – you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's some of that, you know, locker room conversations. Like, all right, they're a good team, but, like, they're not unbeatable. Come on. Like,
well, I think that this year our mentality is totally different from years past. Each and every game, we're going into it to win it. I mean, I know we've always said that, you know, day one of OTAs, we talked about winning a Super Bowl back in 2018, and obviously – you know, you saw the result of what the season was. But this year, we mean that. So any week that, you know, anytime we step on that football field, we're there to win. So, you know, this is another opportunity for us. Obviously, you know, I had a little hiccup last week.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the NFL. Like, you can't get too high. You can't get too low. You know, you got to bounce back. You know, we started watching more film on this opponent, which is the Vikings, on Monday. And then from there, you just try to build up throughout the week and get a good idea of what they're going to do going into the game. So, We're excited team right now, and you know, we got to get that sour taste out of our mouth. So what better way to do it than against a 7-1 ball club?
Yeah, and even today, nobody knows whether Josh is going to play or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you know, Case Keenum's getting ready like he always does.
Yep.
Give us an idea. And I made this point because I had to do it during my career as well. It feels kind of good to rally around the backup. You know what I mean? It kind of feels like, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, let's show them. And it's kind of fun to be in that mindset.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's cool for Case because I've seen, you know, when you're a backup quarterback, obviously somebody like Josh Allen, you know you're not competing for the starting job. And Josh is just going out there throwing touchdowns left and right. And then when something like this happens, you know, Case steps in. I saw his, you know, I'm in the sauna with him the other day, and I saw his mentality shift. You know, like he's not joking as much this week. And, you know, obviously he's locked in. So it's cool to see because, you know, with the backup quarterbacks and even like anybody plays a backup role, which I used to be there. When someone goes out, you know, your mentality just shifts and you know, like, you got to step in, you got to play your role, and you got to, you know, try to help offense, defense, special teams, whatever it may be. So, you know, we have 100% trust in Case, and what he's been in the league a long time and what he's been able to do. So he has a bunch of weapons around him. So all he has to do is just be himself.
I heard, and you may know this, but I heard Sal talking about this morning earlier. Case Keenum is the most prolific college passer in NCAA history.
Over 19,000 passing yards.
Nobody in the history of the game
He played 5 years, but
nobody in the history of the game threw for more yards than Case Keenum did in college.
But even if you take
it away. Is that unbelievable?
That's impressive.
Right?
If I was him, I'd have a
tattoo.
They had some crazy offenses back then. Hawaii with Mouse Davis, and then he was at Houston.
Hey,
and they were throwing the ball.
It
Texas
all counts,
Tech.
Man.
Those teams were throwing the ball all over the place.
Yeah, I mean it's obviously a different type of.
He threw for 150 touchdowns.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane. Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, just going out and expecting to win and the mindset and all of that. I think for fans on a week to week basis, they grip. When they look at the standings, because it's a race now. You guys are at the top of it right now, and thankfully you have critical conference wins over Tennessee, Kansas City, and Baltimore, who are all division leaders, respectively, along with you guys. But they see 0-2 in the division, and fans are like, oh, my God. Yeah. But it's like you got four division games left. Three of them are at home, so there's plenty of ground. Do you guys, like, this playoff picture stuff, I got to imagine you guys got tunnel vision, your head's down, and you're just worried about the next game. You're not even looking at this stuff. Just focus on the next game and then pick your head up at the end of the season kind of thing and see where you're at. Is that kind of what it is?
That's 1,000% what it is. And it's if you get caught up in all the playoff picture, I think it's, what, week 10 right now?
Yeah.
If you get caught up in all that, it's just going to be a disaster down the road. Like, you really have to focus. And I think the best players in this league are able to just focus on the task in front of them. Like, we have the Vikings this week. This is what they do. You don't worry about and I can honestly say, like, early in my career, I was a little bit like that. I would look ahead. I would, you know, my buddies are coming next week to next week's home game. Or,
right,
Thanksgiving game is going to be crazy. Or, you know, we play the day before Christmas and we got to travel to Chicago. You know, all this type of stuff that just runs through your mind. And I realized that, you know, obviously being in the league a long time, and the best guys in this league, the most elite players, just focus on the day. What do you have to do today to get better? And, you know, we can't live in that outside world of being up and down. You know, we lost last week. We got to dread about it. And we got to go out here this week and it's a must win. All that. Like, we don't think like that. Like, it's totally different. We try to get better each day. And, you know, come Sunday, be playing your best.
I've made the point a couple of times over the years that it's easier for players and coaches and guys, for you guys to put that behind you, because you got the Vikings this week. You can't think about the Jets now. We're getting ready for these guys.
Yeah.
Fans, they're out there stewing about Zach Wilson and stuff. You know what I mean? You know, they can't get it out of their minds, because they're not actively working towards the next one.
Well, the thing is, like, okay, so for example, for me, like, this is year 10. And whatever, how many games that's been. But, like, you literally have to, after the game's over, you shut it down and you think about the next thing. So, like, you know, even my wife might get a little frustrated with me every now and then, because she wants to talk about something and then we resolve it the next day and then I'm done thinking about it. You know, that's just the way my mind works. I'm on to the next task, and, you know, I want to try to be, you know, a better player after that, I guess.
Yeah.
Cool stuff, man.
All right. Yeah. Well, look, thanks for popping in. We'll catch up with you again next Friday. All right. Keep giving those young safeties some pointers on the back end
there. We'll do.
Because we know you still see some stuff that maybe they haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So keep schooling them up, all right?
We'll do.
All right. That's Micah Hyde joining us here on Nothing to Hide. We'll take a break. Be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, ladies and gents, it is time for Tailgate Friday, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health care plan of the Buffalo Bills. As we peruse your menu items for tailgating on Sunday, and let me just tell you, you better layer up, because the weather is changing fast.
Ugh.
May even be a little lake effect snow in the forecast Sunday. So we'll see how windy it is and all of that jazz, but... First up, on the Tailgate Friday tweet sheet, Bill says, Sunday sounds like a lasagna Sunday. And I'm just going to tell you, I am on board. There is something, and thankfully I am married to a 100% Italian woman. There is something about coming home from a game, cold game, and you come into the house and it smells like sauce. I cannot tell you how welcoming and comforting it is. It's like curling yourself up in a giant blanket in front of a fire. That's what it, when you smell sauce on the stove, oh my God, so good. Lasagna, yes.
Lasagna.
Unequivocally, yes. Preferably beef lasagna. To me, cheese lasagna is like a waste of time. There's got to be beef layered in there.
Oh, yeah. Or Italian sausage.
Well, yes. Well, any kind of meat, really. Yeah. But yes. JB, driving up from Cincinnati for the weekend with the family. Can't wait to be back at the stadium. He calls it the Ralph, says he's always going to call it that. Wings, take the kids swimming at the hotel, head up to the falls, tailgate on Sunday, and bring home the win. So it sounds like he's just piling in a bucket of wings in the back of the car.
Let's go. Yeah.
It's a common It's a common play.
It sounds like he's got a little bit of a routine going because, you know, the kids swimming at the – they know the hotel. They head up to the fall. Yeah. They've been to the falls. Got a tailgate plan. That strikes me as JB is a veteran, even though he's driving up for the weekend.
That's about 7-8 hour drive from Cincinnati.
It's not across the street.
It's not a hop, skip, and a jump. Speaking of routines, from Hot in Arizona is lamenting the fact that he or she did not stick to their routine. They're going with wings this week. And from Hot in Arizona says, I hold the burden of the loss last week. I always make wings on game day, and last week I did not. Sorry, it won't happen again.
Listen, if you're going to – you got to stick to the process, people. You got to stick to the process, and you got to trust it, own it, just trust the process. You can't be
– Yeah, I mean
– That's a big diversion. If you make wings every week and then you don't, what do you think is going to happen?
I'm gonna give Hot in Arizona a break here. As big a fan as you are, Hot in Arizona, you don't carry that much influence on the outcome of the game. Don't beat yourself up for not making wings last week.
It's your fault.
If you feel better about making them this week and believe it will enhance their chances, by all means, go for it. But do not beat yourself up for last week's game.
Hot in Arizona, you stink.
Jeez.
You can't be doing that.
Josh on the Tailgate Friday tweet sheet says, I'm cooking up an elbow for Poyer and an elbow for Allen. Are we talking about elbow noodles here,
elbow
like
pasta.
In mac and cheese?
Yeah. Or
mac salad?
Is there such a thing as a pig elbow or something like that?
Oh, is there?
I don't know. I'm asking.
Pigs don't even have elbows.
Well, technically, but they don't call them elbows. It's called a thing. I don't know. What
is it called?
I don't know.
They don't even have arms.
Right.
They can't have elbows. How do pigs have elbows? They
it's
don't
possible.
Have elbows.
It depends on what that thing right behind their shoulder, the top of their, above their, was it a hock? Above their, like ham hocks? Isn't a ham hock?
Ham hock is not
is
an
elbow.
Elbow.
It's
otherwise, they call it an elbow.
Or is it just below the elbow?
Now, hold on a second. So pigs' four legs. Do they have a forward bending knee? I know the back legs have
it's
a backward
knuckle.
Bending
it's the,
knee.
It's the bottom of the, above the hoof. They have a back. It
a
goes
front,
like
so
a paw.
It's more like a human
a dog's
knee.
Paw goes backwards.
It's like a human knee. It bends the same way.
Yeah, but
bends forward.
Although I don't think it's like a human knee at the bottom. It probably is because they don't go like it's not like your wrist where you can go around and around.
No,
it only goes one direction.
Yeah, it's like a human knee.
So
it
to
bends
me,
forward on
be,
the fore leg.
That would
backward.
Be the knee.
Not an elbow.
But back here.
Because it's a leg.
It would be more like, that would be a knee, not a wrist.
Well, I didn't say a wrist.
That's
right. You're arguing elbow.
Well,
it's not an elbow.
All I was asking was, is there anything that's called like an elbow
Here's
other
the
than
problem.
Pasta?
Here's the problem. Steve likes pig so much, he was trying to turn a pasta comment,
pig
which
is
I
the
believe
pinnacle
from,
of
into
the,
a pig.
Pig is the pinnacle of the meat
It is
pyramid.
At the top of the pyramid. I do not debate that
so,
for a second.
Yes.
So
I
we will
say,
agree on that.
I'm gonna research pig elbow and I'll get back to you.
I dare you to look that up on the internet. I'd love to see what comes up for that. Do that while I'm doing
you
Jack's
do that.
Submission.
Let's see it. Open
from
a
the
new
tailgate
window here.
Friday tweet sheet.
Go ahead.
I'm very curious to see what you come up with. But Jack says, bringing the flat top and the camping oven to the lot this week. Going with French. Jack is our French onion soup guy. French onion soup with Gruyere and grilling up some Texas toast and deli rye paninis with garlic butter, sharp cheddar, and Munster cheeses, bacon and or ham, and grilled red onions. Now, I will say this.
Who is this?
Red onions are horribly underrated. They are a fantastic addition to just about any dish, but praying the defense balls out for a big W, I think they'll need to do that, especially if Keenum's the one playing wire to wire. But Jack is the guy that submits all the artery-clogging goodness you can possibly pack into a tailgate.
See,
menu.
If you're going tailgate, there's no reason to, do the vegan thing.
Well, right. You're
Not that it, there's nothing wrong with that.
Tailgate is your cheat day.
Yeah, exactly. It's your cheat day. That's
tailgate is
at.
Your cheat day. No
it's
questions
your, it's
asked.
It's your fat, starch, and carbo day.
That's right. I mean, he's got garlic butter, sharp cheddar, and Munster cheeses, then bacon or ham. He's going with the saltiest cured meats you can find, along with more cheese and butter than you could shake a stick at. I mean, I count on Jack every week for these artery-clogging recipes because they're fantastic.
The pig's elbow.
What did you come up with for pig elbow?
Pig's elbow is a it's an Irish style dry gin for one thing. It's a brand of.
It's not even a food. It's a beverage.
So there's that. Now a hock is the joint on the rear of the. Okay, it's a hock, ham hock.
On the rear of the pig, it says.
Yes. It's sometimes they're called ham hocks or pork knuckles. Okay. They're adjacent to the shank.
Okay.
Whatever.
I think we're learning way too much about pig parts. I don't see pig elbow in there anywhere.
No.
So.
No.
I think we'll go with elbow pasta and call it a day.
All right. Well, I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, now we do. And you know, you can learn. We provide educational value on the show, and, you know, if we can pass it along, all the better.
I just had a question.
Well, there you go.
The answer took us down a rabbit hole. Sorry.
Or a pig hole in this case. Tailgate Friday, as we said, presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health care plan of the Buffalo Bills. We take a break here. When we come back, it is the man that you see in the second hour of every Friday edition of One Bills Live during the regular season, Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, coming your way to talk X's and O's next for Bills Vikings. Stay tuned.
Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Welcome to hour number two on a Friday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. Pleased to be joined now, as we are every week at this time, by NFL Films senior producer and co-host of ESPN's NFL Matchup Show, one Greg Cosell, joining us. His weekly segment presented by Scott Lawnyard, an official commercial site work partner of the Buffalo Bills. Greg, looking good in that Bills red there. Nicely done.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys, man. I got it yesterday. I said I'm wearing it today for the show without question.
Yeah, there you go. Awesome.
You look good in it. That bright red.
There you go.
It's a strong
color.
Hey,
I got to look good in something, Steve. You know, I don't know what that is.
That is a run game. That's a run game color, baby.
Oh, and that right is that what you're expecting this week,
yes,
Steve? If Case Keenum is in fact the starter,
maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Why don't we begin with the Bills, Greg? You know what Josh Allen's skill set is. Obviously, we know if Case Keenum has to start on Sunday, that while the play calls are all going to be the same in terms of terminology, what Ken Dorsey is going to be calling for Case Keenum figures to be in stark contrast to that of Josh Allen, right?
I would say to some degree. I mean, Brownie, there is a lot of quick game rhythm throws in the Bills' offense.
Right.
And that's, Keenum can do that without question. Most quarterbacks can. Obviously, there's certain things that they would not call, and there's certain plays that Josh Allen will make that obviously very few guys in the league can make, so certainly Keenum cannot make them. But a couple of thoughts. Keenum's played in this league, and he's been efficient. He had that season when they lost to the Eagles in the NFC Championship game the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl, where he was pretty much the starter and played well. He's not immobile. He's not a statue. He just obviously, again, I'm not saying anything profound, doesn't have the skill set of Josh. Few do, if any. But I think in terms of calling the game, I'm really curious to see what they do. As I'm sure you guys are, if in fact, Case Keenum would be the starter, I guess the big question would be, would they perhaps increase the run game volume? I don't know the answer to that. We'll see. But I don't think they would dramatically change. Like, they're not going to change the concepts in the pass game. It's just a matter of what you call.
Is there enough in the passing game of the Bills, say, for instance, Greg, you would call the exact same play for Case Keenum, But he would just have the ability to make different choices within that concept. He would take the check down. He would take the underneath stuff. He would look the safeties off for the deep route. They'd have to honor it because they got guys running out there, and he could just take an easier throw. Is there some of that that's going to go on, or is that predominantly what they would do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Josh being an aggressive thrower and capable of big-time throws down the field, Keenum's not capable of that. But like you said, Steve, it doesn't mean you can't call the same routes because, you know, unless you're calling, you know, a true shot play where there's just, let's say, two vertical-type routes, most of the time you're going to have a shorter throw involved in a route concept. So you can call some of the same things. You know, I think it because Josh is so physically gifted and can obviously throw the ball deep down the field. I mean, that throw he made after the injury, you know, that may have been the best throw of the season. It was just happened to be incomplete, you know. You know, obviously Case Keenum can't do that. But I still think you can run, you know, kind of an efficient passing game, which is kind of what the Bills have evolved and morphed into for the most part anyway.
Let's talk a little bit about that Vikings defense that the Bills offense will be facing. Yeah. Pretty good in terms of pressure rate, only rushing four. That's not to say they won't blitz occasionally, but Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter, I think Danielle Hunter is finally getting a feel for their new 3-4 front, and Za'Darius Smith is wholly familiar with that, but last three games, Greg, these guys have combined for 8 sacks and 16 quarterback hits. And if you watch last week's game against Washington, I mean, they were collapsing the pocket with alarming regularity.
Yep. Well, this is Ed Donatell. And Ed Donatell is from the Vic Fangio school. So you're seeing a lot of split safety coverage. You see four-man pressures. And they have really good length up front. You mentioned two. I would add DJ Wanham to that mix. He's another long, athletic pass rusher. And as you know, they move people around quite a bit. So you end up with Za'Darius Smith lining up as a stand-up zero technique, head up over the center. You see him lining up over guards. You see the same with Hunter at times. You see the same with Wanham. Even Patrick Jones, the second-year player from the University of Pittsburgh, will do that at times. And they've got two veteran linebackers in Hicks and Kendricks who are very smart, savvy players. And then they've got Harrison Smith, another veteran safety. So, you know, this is a defense with good people. You'd call it more of an execution defense than a highly schemed defense. Although, as I said, they do have multiple front alignments. That's probably where the scheming comes into play more. But they're not a high percentage pressure defense in terms of sending 5 or 6 rushers.
They do. When they go into the secondary, they've got Cameron Danzler and Patrick Peterson. Yep. They've got some guys back there. Certainly Peterson is a little bit past his prime, but still an elite athlete, or at least was at one point. How does their secondary complement their front?
Well, if you're going to play a lot of zone, which they play more zone than man, although it's not a static zone because it's from the Vic Fangio school where – you know, what you see pre-snap is not often what you get after the snap. So I don't want to make it seem like, hey, they just line up in basic zone and it's easy. But I think when you play the way they do, you're relying on your pass rush. And they've been able to get pass rush with four. That's the critical piece because it's a numbers game. If you can rush with four, you have 7 in coverage. And you can do a lot of things on your back end with sort of hybrid zone man looks, matchup principles. As you know, Steve, you can do a lot of things with 7. You start having to rush 5, then you have 6. And it changes the numbers dynamic. But all this is a numbers game. If you can play coverage with 7, you really have a lot of options. And they've been mostly able to do that.
Flipping it around to their offense, you know, Kirk Cousins has been efficient, if not spectacular. I'm interested in some of the numbers that have come out of his play this year. Chief among them, all 6 of his interceptions coming on downfield throws. I realize that he's very much a by-the-book quarterback. You know, whatever the play is, he's going to execute the play with very little improvisation. It seems like the only guy he gives extra chances to is Jefferson, and with good reason. But he gets victimized last week on a downfield throw into the end zone, corner route to Jefferson, kind of puts up a 50-50 ball, and it gets picked. What do we pull anything away from that? Is there enough of a sample size with six picks all on downfield throws with him?
I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that means, Brownie. You know, I think you nailed it, though, in describing what he is. I think this is an offense that's still trying to get its sea legs with the new head coach, Kevin O'Connell. Mm. And obviously he put in a new scheme. You know, a year ago, the Vikings were one of the heaviest percentage-wise team that played with a fullback. Now they are among the league leaders in 11 personnel, because that's where Kevin O'Connell's background is with the Rams. So this is an 11 personnel offense. I have to tell you, I think one of the most overlooked trades at the trading deadline was TJ Hockenson.
Yeah.
Because I think TJ Hockenson, from a talent standpoint, is a top three or four tight end in this league. And I remember doing him coming out of Iowa, and I did not have anything typed in my weakness column. You know, I think this guy is a really good player. For whatever reason, it didn't work out in Detroit in terms of volume targets, but he comes in last week, has 9 targets and 9 catches. And I think he's going to become their number 2 target receiver behind Jefferson. He's really gifted. He's a really good athlete. And he's a really good inline blocker as well. And we know that the offense primarily starts with Dalvin Cook in the run game.
Right. And if this Viking offense, I mean, we've talked about Kirk Cousins, about how he's a little bit of a, and this is why he's been successful too. He understands the offense and runs it.
Yep.
And it's always designed to be successful. And the guy, he rarely goes off script. And even in the touchdown he had last week, he went to his third option in the back of the end zone, looked right, looked back left, then came and caught the tight end across the middle. Just almost robotic in his ability to hang in there, go through his progressions, and then make the right read. How does this offense, in its balance of run-pass, play into his ability just to stay within the lines?
Yeah, I mean, he's the kind of quarterback now, Steve, as you know, that a lot of people say is kind of becoming a little bit of a dinosaur in the league, that he's not the guy you want, you know, let's say, if you're drafting a quarterback, because he's your pure executor and ball distributor. That's exactly what Kirk Cousins is. You know, the offense has to work. He knows where to go with the ball. He'll stand and deliver. As you said, he's not really going to make second reaction plays. He does that once in a great while, but that's not his game. So he's kind of, you know, an old school executor and ball distributor, but they have a lot of weapons. And, you know, the key obviously is pressure. If you can get pressure on him, then you can obviously make him play a little faster. And, you know, quarterbacks that are pocket players, you know, they don't want to play that way, obviously. He doesn't necessarily move within the pocket great either. He's kind of a guy that it just he sees it. He reads it. He knows where to go with the ball. He's your classic case of he throws it to the right receiver at the right time with the right kind of throw. That's exactly what Kirk Cousins is.
All right. So now Justin Jefferson obviously is, you know, concern number one in the passing game for the Bills defense. How have most of the opponents played him? Have they gone bracket coverage with him and then just worry about everybody else in matchup ways? Or has it been a mixed bag through the course of the first 8 games? Is there a blueprint for Jefferson, I guess, is what I'm asking.
No, and there's never a blueprint for great players, you know, because otherwise everybody would do the same thing and they'd stop him. So, you know, I've never been, Brownie, a blueprint guy, because there's always games where great players get shut down and people think that, oh, that's what you have to do every single week. And it never quite works that way. He lines up both inside and outside. They move him around. Are there times people bracket him? Absolutely. Are there times they double him? Sure. But they move him around, as we're seeing right here. You know, it's not that easy just to say we're going to do this on every play. Plus, you know, they have a pretty multiple offense in terms of their concepts. So there's other good players. You know, Thielen is not exactly what he was 3 or 4 years ago, but he's a pretty good player. And now, and by the way, their third receiver, Osborne, you guys may remember him because he started at the University of Buffalo before his last year at the University of Miami. He's a pretty good receiver, too. He's a really good three. His target share will probably drop because of Hockenson, but he is not a bad receiver at all. And now you add Hockenson to the mix, Brownie. You can't just say, okay, let's just take away Jefferson and we shut everybody down.
Let's talk about the guys up front. The Buffalo Bills, they're going to go in. Rousseau is out, has been ruled out of this game. You got Von Miller, and it's going to be either Shaq Lawson or A.J. Epenesa, one of those the usual suspects. You know, kind of match up, do a matchup analysis of their offensive line against the pass rush of the Bills.
I like their O-line. I think it's a young group that's only going to ascend. When Darrisaw came out last year, I thought he was one of the best left tackle prospects in the draft. In fact, I didn't think there was a significant difference between him and Penei Sewell. So, you know, I think he's played well based on my tape. It's a young group. They start the rookie from LSU, another player I really like this year on tape, Ed Ingram. He's had his ups and downs for sure, but I think he's going to be a good player. Cleveland is a young player as well. He's the other guard. And then they got O'Neal at tackle, the right tackle, and he's a solid veteran. I think the weak link is at center. I don't think he's a really good player. You know, I wouldn't say he's a stiff, but I think that's the weak link. But I think this is an O-line that is getting better and better, Steve, and I think it's a pretty solid group.
What do we make of the Vikings' ability to win six consecutive one-score games? I mean, it just seems like they're getting the plays when they absolutely have to have them. But then you watch some of these games, Greg, and it's like, well, where the heck was that the first three quarters?
Right.
Like, I mean, the Washington game is a perfect example. You know, they come out for the first drive, march right down the field, touchdown. Then they punt the ball like the next five times in a row and then rally at the end of the game. Can you put your finger on what it is? Because there seem to be these long lulls in play from them. And it's like, oh, all right, let's finish the game. And then they do.
The short answer to your question would be no. I can't put my finger on that. if I tried to, I'd be lying. You know, I really don't know the answer to that, other than the fact that I think that they're still, as I said earlier, still working through having a feel for Kevin O'Connell's offense. And when you're working through a new offense, the tendency is you have stretches where the execution just isn't there. And also, the one thing I would say, I don't think their run game has been quite as consistent as they would like. I think Dalvin Cook is a terrific back, but with the exception of a few runs, it hasn't quite been, I think, what they want from a sustaining basis. You know, that's the thing. You know, when Cook is going well, sure, is he capable of breaking a 60-yard touchdown? Absolutely. But I think when he's going well, he's such a high-velocity runner that he gets 7-8 yards, and that changes the whole dynamic of your offense when it's 2nd and 2 versus 2nd and 9.
Yeah, it seems as though, and I'm with you, the numbers, they look like they can run it pretty well. And even when you look at Dalvin Cook, 131 carries, 608 yards, but it's a little spotty, you know, a little bit of a roller coaster. Sometimes it looks like really like bland. And then other times, like he snapped off a big run this last week. So it's feast or famine, I guess, is a better way to describe it.
Yeah. But he's a really, really good back. I mean, you know, he's I've always used the term with him, velocity. He's a velocity runner. You know, it's predominantly zone. And when he can see the crack or the hole at the first level, he gets through that in a hurry with speed. And he's kind of physical, even though he's not a big, big man. He's not small. He's probably 210, so he's not tiny. But, you know, he runs hard. And he's a tough guy to bring down because of that speed and velocity.
All right, so, Greg, just kind of looking at the division race, the conference race here in the AFC, it is tightly packed. As you know, the Bills, you know, you say, oh, it's an NFC opponent. You know, if you can't have Josh this week, it's not catastrophic if you lose it because it's not a conference loss per se. But this thing's getting tight here. I'm kind of anticipating a little bit of topsy-turviness over the next few weeks because it is so tightly packed. One loss, one win. I mean, for example, if the Bills can't pull this game out this week, and the Jets or Miami win, Buffalo goes from the 1 seed to the 5 seed in a hurry.
No, I know. I mean, last week's loss was a tough one for that reason. You know, there's a lot of football to be played. Obviously, the big question is Josh. They'll keep it close to the vest. You know, it is the kind of injury where it can be a long-term injury too. So we just don't know at this point. you know, and look, you're in the building, but you know how Sean is. He's not the kind of guy that just is overly transparent about this kind of stuff. So we really don't know. But, you know, we hope if he does miss this week that it's one game and he can come back the next week. But you're right about that, Brownie. I mean, you know, it's the AFC is very, very good. There's a lot of teams that can beat you in any given week. And we saw that with the Bills and the Jets.
Yeah, and we've been talking about it all week, about there's nine teams that have five wins or more, and nobody's got more than six.
Yeah, in the AFC.
In the AFC. So it's a horse race, and it's going to be hard. It's going to come down, I think, for the first time in a long time. It looks like it's going to come down to a number of tiebreakers. They may have to go deeper than they've gone in recent memory to get that last five, six, seven seed.
Yeah, I'll leave that to the people that know that stuff. It's funny, Steve, when we get to the end of the year and people ask me about that stuff, I just say, I just wait till they tell me. I never try to figure that stuff out.
Well, and the problem is we've got two teams in the AFC that have a tie. And that is, oh my gosh, that is an absolute wrench in the works.
Last thing real quick, Greg, that I wanted to mention that I forgot to ask you about. The Minnesota defense, last in the league in red zone touchdown efficiency. They're giving up touchdowns in their red zone at almost 80% clip. Now, they've allowed the fewest red zone possessions to their opponent in the league, so they're not getting down there often. But when they do, they're giving up yardage, and, I mean, they're allowing teams to run down there at a rate of 3.78 yards per carry. That's a full yard over the league average. They probably are not going to have Dalvin Tomlinson again this week, who's got a calf injury. I guess whether it's Keenum or whether it's Allen, can the Bills make some hay down there if they can get inside the 20?
They've struggled, the Bills, with their red zone offense for basically 2 years now. So, you know, and they're not a team that normally lines up and tries to bang it in, you know, it's when they get into the red zone. So, it brings us back to our initial thoughts here about what's the Bills offense going to look like if it's Case Keenum? Is there going to be more volume in the run game? Are they going to try to play that way, knowing that, hey, maybe they can't put up 30 this week against a really solid defense overall? You know, is this the kind of game that you have to play a little more old school, Brownie? You know, try to, I don't want to say, you know, eat clock, but I mean, you know, try to have a more balanced offense. You know, James Cook seemingly has been getting a few more snaps, you know, in recent weeks. Is this a week where he gets, you know, a few more snaps in the run game? You know, because he does bring more explosiveness to the table than Singletary.
Right, and it's also, now that he's been acclimated, Nyheim Hines may be an option as well. Both those guys have breakaway speed, and that changes the equation. Certainly, they're more explosive than Singletary, and we've seen it right from the get-go. When Nyheim Hines showed up, that guy can run routes like a champ.
He's they've got two backs who are really good receivers now in Hines and Cook.
Right. So maybe with a quarterback that has the skill set of Case Keenum, maybe you take that offensive or that aspect of your offense out of the wrapper and use it.
Yep. I mean, you know, my sense is with Case, there's probably a little more scheming involved in the sense that you're going to try to define reads and throws for him. Whereas with Josh, not that you don't want to do that, but you kind of know that he can make some throws that others can't.
Right.
All right, Greg. Thanks for chopping it up with us. We appreciate it. We'll catch up with you next week.
All right, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You look good in that sweatshirt.
That senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, wearing his Red Bill sweatshirt this week that we sent to him because I was wearing one. He's like, hey, I like that. Can I get one of those? And I'm like, all right, well, we can accommodate you.
Yeah,
you help us out every week. So, yeah. So now he's wearing it.
Now he's got to wear it every week now, right? I mean, he's got to, like, put it off,
take it off. Well, he wore it today. If the Bills win on Sunday, he has to wear it next week.
Yeah, somebody.
That's
right. Trust the process.
Yeah, like by rule, he would have to wear it next week. So hopefully it is a lucky sweatshirt because – as we said, that conference race is a real thing. And even though you're playing an NFC opponent this week, getting win number 7 would be muy importante. We have to take a break. When we come back, we got some other stuff in the hopper for you. coming up here at 2:30. Might have a little time for some NFL true false, but plenty more coming your way, including the mailbag. When we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Hey, want to join Josh Allen on Kyle Brandt's Basement? Through the month of November, fans who purchase Bills Mafia sauces or rubs at Wegmans with their Shoppers Club membership will be entered to join Josh on Kyle's podcast sometime in December. And don't forget, proceeds from Bills Mafia sauces and rubs go directly to the Patricia Allen Fund at Oshai Children's Hospital. Steve, I did also want to mention, we've got a pretty good Bills by the Numbers podcast up and out right now as we took a headlong dive into the record number of close games in the NFL this season and why the heck that is. And Minnesota has been in the thick of it.
Yeah.
All six games of their six-game winning streak by one score or less. So go to any podcast platform that you use. Just type in the search window, Bills by the Numbers, and you'll get me and Steve in all its glory talking about that stuff. Steve playing the numbers game. Did pretty well in the numbers game this week. Got to give it to you. Just lots of good stuff packed in there. A little bit different from our daily show, One Bills Live. So check it out when you get a chance. Bills by the Numbers on any of your podcast platforms. Steve, we have to dive into the OBL Friday fan mailbag.
Let's go.
And we begin with Rick, who says, if Josh sits this week, wouldn't it make more sense to start Matt Barkley instead of Case Keenum? Matt has more experience running this offense and has more playing time with the offense. What do you say to that?
Case Keenum's better. I mean, they had a contest, you know.
Right. There's a reason he's the backup, basically.
They had a contest, and Case won. That's why he gets to play. That's the way it works. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I understand, you know.
That should give you some confidence. If you think Matt Barkley can run it, what do you think Case Keenum can do? Because they've watched him do it every day.
Right. I respect the experience angle.
They didn't
But they believe Keenum puts them in a better position to win if he has to play.
Yeah, they're not – they don't just – pick these guys.
It's not arbitrary.
Yeah, it's not arbitrary. They earn it.
And they're watching every snap of practice film, training camp film, and they OTA film.
Yeah, and they did it all. They've been doing it since May. So, yeah, that they're in the pecking order they're in for a reason. It's not just, you know, rote. They decide because of their play, nothing else. So, no, I don't think that.
Rachel from the mailbag asks, is Dean Marlowe ready to start yet? I feel like he might be a step up from Jaquan Johnson at this point.
Maybe. We'll see. They brought him in for a reason. They feel like they can help him. Of course, with Poyer being in and out of the lineup with injury.
And he's out again this week.
Out again this week for the fourth time. They don't have Poyer or Hyde. Micah's out for the season, so they've got their guys. And they're going to be going without them. At least Micah. That's maybe at some point he will. We don't know if he's going to do it this week or not, though. But certainly there was a reason they traded for him.
They needed depth.
That's not just signing a guy off the street.
They needed depth. I think they knew that Jordan Poyer's injury could linger for a couple of weeks, and it has. And the only guy behind DeMar Hamlin and Jaquan Johnson was Cam Lewis at the safety position. So you're short there. And they had to add somebody, and Dean Marlowe, I think, was a good add, a guy who knows the system and has been around this defense, knows how to play off a lot of the guys who are still in this defense from the time that he left 2 years ago for Detroit in free agency. So, it made sense to acquire him. Do you turn to him? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Jaquan did have a rough game last week, missed some tackles, was a little slow on a couple of reads, but we'll see. We'll see where it goes from here.
The thing about it is he's not going to get on the field until they trust him, until he proves he's a better option. And they're watching him to see if he gets there.
Yeah.
One of the things that people don't get is practice is practice. It's important to get prepared to play. But it's also competition, particularly in this culture here. And I don't remember this as being a bigger part of things as when I played than maybe – because we had some established guys, but they're competing and they're bringing these guys in. They brought Marlowe in to compete. You know, DeMar Hamlin, Jaquan Johnson are there to compete with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. They're trying to get these guys better, and that atmosphere is what makes this player development that is so prevalent here in Buffalo a thing. They got these guys competing in practice, trying to get on the field. And when they earn it, they get it. So it's not just like, hey, we want them to work hard and you know, try and get them to, you know, to practice so our starters can get better. We want them to get better. And in fact, we want this guy to get better than this guy so we can play him.
Yeah.
So we're improving. That's a real thing. So Marlowe, he's probably out there trying, and he probably understands that it's out there for him if he wants it, and he's probably working towards it right now. So if he's not out there, it's because he's not there yet, and that's the only reason.
Yeah.
They don't hesitate.
From Jeremy in the fan mailbag, the last few weeks I've been buying apples and don't know why. I think it's because I listen to this show every day and hear the bit for Snapdragon apples. Where, again, can one find these? My subconscious has been programmed and I must try these now. Wegmans is where you can go to get Snapdragon apples. So head down there. I just had one for lunch today. With my lunch, I should say. It wasn't my lunch. I had a sandwich and then...
The
Snapdragon
official apple of the Buffalo Bills. That's correct. Snapdragons, yeah.
Just well, look get at them that. At Wegmans. That's where they got them. Dude, so head down
how
there.
How about that? That's the first request like that we've gotten on the Friday mailbag.
That's right. Steve, let's move along to NFL true-false. Let's throw a couple of true-falses at you. Presented by Patron Tequila, the official tequila of the Buffalo Bills. And we begin with this. NFL true-false number one. Jordan Love should finish the season at quarterback for the Packers. This team is in a tailspin. Aaron Rodgers looks like a shell of himself. He should finish the season at quarterback for the Packers. Because they got six losses. What are they, 3-6?
3-6. If it gets to eight losses, yes. I think should finish.
Currently 11th in the conference, Green Bay.
Yeah. Should finish, not until they're out of it. Will finish, maybe. Don't get too, you know, don't go over the overboard thinking Jordan Love's going to come in and save the season.
No.
He's not going to save the season. But if you want to find out if he can play, okay. Give him the last month of the season. But let me tell you this. If he comes in, and the only reason you're going to bring him in, I mean, Aaron Rodgers isn't going anywhere.
Right. He signed
a multi-year deal. They'll be dead in the water next year if they cut him because they won't be able to pay anybody anyway, and you'll be under – no. If you want to find out if he can play, okay, I can listen to that. You don't want to get Aaron Rodgers, have more miles on him or whatever, and you want to find some things out about – Jordan Love and everybody else, okay. He will finish the season, though, is a strong word. He may play some, but I don't think he's going to start games at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think this question is asking, should he finish the season at quarterback basically now to the end of the year? And I would say false.
No, he's not going to
finish. Should not do that.
No.
When the Packers are out of the playoff race and you want to entertain that, that's fine by me. Go ahead, knock yourself out. But for now, I would say false because you're doing a disservice to your team. Paid this guy $50 million a year to lead your offense, and now that you're 3-6, you're just going to put him on the bench?
You can't
do that.
And here's the thing, too. You put yourself in a kind of a lose-lose situation. You go out, so Jordan Love goes out, and he knocks it dead. He's everything Aaron Rodgers used to be, right? He goes out there, throws touchdowns, runs for touchdowns, no interceptions, lights it up. Well, then what?
Yeah.
Then what are you going to do? You're going to trade him?
No.
Get a one? No, you're not going to trade him.
No.
You're going to play him ahead of Aaron Rodgers and his $50 million contract? That's a tough sell.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
You're not trading him.
What are you going to – yeah, right? You're not going to trade. You're not going to – are you going to play him next year?
Yeah.
Are you going to let him are you going to let him compete?
Otherwise, why the hell did you sign him for $50 million a year on a multi-year deal? You're not going to trade him. You just made a $50 million a year commitment to the guy. You're going to trade him?
I'm talking about Jordan Love.
Oh, Jordan Love you're talking about.
You're gonna say, hey, the guy can play. Let's, you know, give us a one for
that. You could do that, sure. The quarterback drafts for 2023 and 2024 are very good. So you can get a guy next year and put him in the pipeline, and then when Aaron is done, maybe next year.
Well, what do you do with Jordan Love if he comes in and lights it up?
Yeah, you count your blessings.
Count your blessings.
You like that? You like that one.
You're,
you like that one, didn't
count
you?
Count your
You weren't
blessings.
Expecting that, were you?
I was not. No, give me something tangible. What? Seriously, what are you going to do with him? You going to let him sit another year or two
no,
years or three years
probably,
behind Aaron?
If I can increase his value by what he's doing on the field at the end of the season and convince somebody that he could lead their football team, yeah, I'll trade him. Provided I can get a one in return.
So you're going to trade
two ones.
Wait. You're going to trade the Jordan Love, or you're going to try and trade either one or both?
No, I would trade Love because you made the commitment that you did to Rodgers.
What's a commitment got to do with it?
Well, it's,
if somebody else
I'll
will take
go look at the cap hit, but I got to believe it's pretty fast.
No, if you trade him, they take it.
No, they don't. Not all the bonus monies and everything.
Well, yeah, but Jordan Love's under contract. You don't. It's money already spent.
Are you talking Jordan Love or are you talking Aaron Rodgers? Because you're flipping back and forth and you're confusing me.
They both have to do with the other. If you're going to keep Jordan Love and trade Aaron Rodgers, or you can trade Jordan Love and keep Aaron Rodgers. But you got to entertain both things. If Jordan Love shows you he can be the guy.
Yeah. To me, the commitment they made to Rodgers means that if you have to choose between one of them, you're moving Love. You just are. You're not trading away the four-time MVP. They're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. Not with the track record. Jordan Love wins four games, and now you're picking him over Aaron Rodgers? They're not doing that. There's no way.
How many games did Aaron Rodgers win before they chucked Brett Favre to the curb?
Well.
They kicked him to the curb.
They did.
That's what you got to do, man. If Jordan Love makes chicken salad out of chicken poo that Aaron Rodgers made.
But how good – yeah, but there are various degrees of how good Jordan Love looks.
I just said that's what he did. He lit the world on fire, caught lightning in a bottle. They were smoking hot, and he was winning games.
He was
Josh Allen in a Green Bay uniform.
Then you got to check the financials. Can you afford to even trade the dang guy because you paid him $50 million a year? I don't know what his contract says in terms of the bonus money. In terms of what you can do and whether you could afford the dead cap
hit. It's just
hit.
For 1 year.
Remember, they were up against it. No, he signed through 2026.
Who?
Rodgers.
Well, that's irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant when your dead cap in 2023 is $99 million. That's what it is.
I just
looked it up.
You wouldn't have any
dead cap.
You wouldn't have any of that. You trade him.
You move him off your roster, it hits your cap. All the bonus money you take because you signed him.
They didn't give
him
99. No. That's 99 million if you cut him. It's not that much if you trade him.
No, because his base salary next year is $1.165 million. He had a signing bonus of 12.98. He had an option bonus of 14.5. All of that hits your cap along with the next 3 years after that. All that bonus money is dead cap, whether you trade him or you cut him. $99 million. They're keeping Rodgers, moving Love.
Well, here's the thing. If they did that, I think they already know about Jordan Love.
Okay.
Right?
Well, that was a very circular conversation.
Some moot point.
Break time for us.
Whatever.
Steve and I to come back with the final segment where there's something to be said about Thanksgiving plans for the NFL that involve the late, great John Madden. More on that next here on One Bills Live. Game plan presented by United Rentals. United Rentals is the exclusive and official construction equipment rental partner of the Buffalo Bills. Steve, building a game plan for the Bills offense.
Bills offense, Case Keenum's got to take the high percentage completion, get the ball out of his hands. I think there's a much bigger, there should be a much more, you're going to get many more targets this week to Cook, to Hines, to Singletary, to Dawson Knox. They're going to be some easier completions to get the ball out of his hands, and the run game is going to have to be a little bit more prominent along with play action. When you want to get a big play, that's what you're going to have to do. No called quarterback runs for Case Keenum. Maybe the occasional RPO, and that's where it's going to stop. You've got to stay on the field offensively and be efficient. Get yourself to the red zone because you can take advantage of the Vikings defense down there.
Knowing the defense – is going to have a hard time getting to Cousins with all the three-step drop and quick throws that he makes. They got to get their hands up. Saw a lot of batted passes on film in their last three games on Cousins. That helps the guys on the back end. Hopefully, Tre'Davious plays to help in the coverage. And hopefully, it's enough for a win. That's it for us. We'll see you on Monday at noon to break it all down. Enjoy the game on Sunday.